Trainer Talks and Tales acknowledges the traditional owners and custodians of the land in which we're recording this podcast, the Turrbal and Yugara people of Meanjin. We pay our respects to elders past and present and extend our respect to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples today.
Trainer Talks and Tales love having an array of guests with a variety of opinions. However, the views of the individuals do not necessarily reflect the perspectives of the host facilities.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Trainer Talks and Tales. You are joined by Tess. Now, I am completely solo on this episode. Daisy is still in the UK, but she will be flying back at the end of the week. So never fear, she'll be back for next week's episode. But before I got into this chat, I thought I'd tell you a little bit more about what's been happening, what I've been up to today, which is animal related. Just this afternoon, I did the Aussie Bird Count. So BirdLife Australia does this initiative every year in October to get people out and about and collecting data for birds in Australia. So I did it this afternoon and it goes from the 14th to the 20th of October. And it's just lovely. I mean, obviously I do love birds, but it's really nice to, you know, grab a beer, grab your binos, have a bit of a look around. And it's quite surprising actually just how much you see in 20 minute period. So I do recommend if you are interested in birds or even if you're not, you know, just an excuse to go for a stroll to jump on that, because this is airing tomorrow. You'll still have a few days to actually get involved. So that's my recommendation for the week. Anyway, let's get into this episode. Today we actually speak to Lexi Scott, who I've known since I was probably 14 years old. She is an amazing wildlife carer. She basically got me inspired into working with animals and pursuing an animal career. I just fell in love with her passion and she's just an amazing human. So hopefully you enjoy this episode and you learn a little bit more about wildlife caring here in Australia and enjoy this episode as much as I did. Let's get into it. Okay, Lexi, thank you so much for joining us. It's lovely to have you on.
Lovely to be here. Hello.
Okay, so you have told me that you're a big fan of the podcast, so I know you know that this is coming. We're going to ask you your fast five if you're happy to answer as quickly as possible. You ready to do that?
Yep.
All right, they're pretty easy. Number one, chocolate or lollies?
Chocolate.
Number two, Africa holiday or Europe holiday?
Europe holiday.
Sand or snow?
Oh, sand.
Forest or beach?
Beach.
And lucky last, I know that you see a lot of sunrises, but sunrise or sunset?
Sunrise.
Wow. Oh, I thought you'd be sick of seeing them, so you'd go to sunset.
No, sunrise is always the possibility of something exciting happening.
I love it. I'm definitely a sunset girl, but I like that. Okay. Nice positive way of looking at it. Okay, well, thank you so much for joining us. It's really lovely to have you on the chat. I've actually been looking forward to this for a long time. I remember saying to you months and months and months and months ago that we'd love to have you on, so it's great to have you here.
Yep.
Now, I've known you since I was just a young girl. I believe I was about 14 or so it's been about 15 years. And I was going to say that you and your mum are actually a big reason I am where I am today, and I'm very, very grateful for that. I was 14 years old. My dad and I were doing the RSPCA rescues. I obviously couldn't drive, so poor old dad was driving around Brisbane picking up injured scrub turkeys and things and dropping them to vets and that kind of thing. And I dropped off a possum to your mum's house, and there your lovely mum was with a possum in her bra. You know, her bosoms were literally wriggling with this little possum.
Still happens today.
And I saw her and I was like, I like this lady. This is what I want to do. This is amazing. So throughout the years, obviously I met you quite shortly after. I was just so inspired by your passion and I wanted to get involved. And I honestly think it was the two of you that said, oh, Tess, when you're a bit older, you should work at Lone Pine. So I owe everything to you. But anyway, that's enough about me. I'm just so grateful that I met you. But anywho, we'd love to hear about you. Can you tell us a little bit more about you, your studies, your love for animals, and what it is you do now.
Okay, well, I was originally a medical scientist and had to stop working. And we'd always had puppies, kittens, birds, chooks. My grandmother would rescue anything. So I grew up with lots of animals around the house. So when I had to stop working, a friend that was a vet said to me, "Hey, how about trying this?" And she threw me this pinky possum. And I really loved it. Not knowing that it was supposed to be hard, I just followed what they said to do, and it worked. And from there, it snowballed. And as I couldn't go back to work, it was a thing that I could do to keep me going. So I had joined Wildcare, and I learned how to take care of possums first, and then macropods. And from there, it's been 20 years of caring for wildlife, so
20
which is,
years.
Yes, very scary. And I was trying to think of numbers today. Probably I do between the last couple of years, I haven't done as many, but normally I do between 100 to 150 animals a year times 20. That's way, that's ridiculous.
No,
not all
amazing.
Of them make it. But I do more teaching now too. I encourage new carers and try and share what I've learned from older carers through to and mostly I look after macropods now, but I have about six carers that look after possums for me, and they come out and volunteer and talk to me, and so I'm kind of looking after them by default. But
Yes. Oh, incredible, Lexi. That's so many little lives that you've saved, and so many other carers that you've helped who have also helped these little bubbers as well. So you should be very proud of yourself.
Oh, thank you.
Incredible.
It's good to share. And the other day I got a little Joey from down the road, and I thought, oh, this must be my grandchild, or maybe my great grandchild, or my great great grandchild. But yeah.
Somehow has been involved with you. Absolutely.
Yes.
Now, I obviously have been to your beautiful Brookfield home many times. Sorry for telling everyone what suburb you live in. But can
That's
you
right.
quickly give us a little rundown of what a day in the life of your home at Brookfield would be?
Okay, so we start about 5:30 in the morning. And that's normally with feeding the young joeys, which will be the pinkies and the just furring, which are on 4-hourly feeds. So we get that out of the way. At the moment, I've only got three of those, and we feed them every 4 hours throughout the day. So lots of sleep deprivation, which you probably understand. And then we have we've got some wallabies in our pre-release pen at the top of the hill that are getting ready to go out. So we go up, we take them grass that we've cut, we take up macropod pellets, sometimes we take up some cut up sweet potato or some browse that's left over from the possums, and we check that they've been all right overnight and everybody's okay, and fill up the waters, and then we come down. And then, as you can imagine, having wallabies in the house, we have to then clean the house every morning. So at the moment, I think I've got about eight in the house. So it's a sweep, mop, pick up sheets at the feeding stations, anything else they've decided to destroy during the night. Like the other night, a box of tissues was shredded, so it looked like Christmas in our kitchen. And you've got to pick that all up and clean it all up, which normally takes an hour or two. And then around the house, we have cages with possums in them that have come, that aren't babies, but we call it kindy. So they're learning to be outside, but they're still getting milk and food. So I've got to change up their cages, bring in their food dishes, put milk out for them. So that gets us through to the next feed time. So we feed joeys again.
Yeah.
And then in there's also like washing all the sheets and baggies and things. And then mid-afternoon, we cut leaf for the possums that are in pre-release because we have them around. And we cut up some supplementary food that goes in with them. And then we cut grass for the kangaroos for that night and the next morning. And normally I have some volunteers that come in the afternoon and help as well. And we'll go back up at dusk and put pellets up and grass and just check everybody's okay again for the day. And yeah, that's the day done. And you fall into bed exhausted, ready to wake up in a couple of hours and feed you through the night again. So
yes, and then rinse and repeat. And then do you find yourself constantly going, is that the time already? Like the day just
yes,
goes?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Oh. Like, yeah. Most of the time it's like, oh my God, it's 12. It's time for lunch again. Or that 4 hours feels like 1 hour between, you know, each feed. Sometimes when you get really, really tinies in, I feed them 3 hourly. So it feels like I'm constantly making, washing. Yeah. Oh, that's the other thing. Wash bottles. Constantly washing bottles and getting ready for the next lot of feeds. So, yeah. Yeah.
Honestly, when you think of, I mean, I'm in the, you know, think of it now. When you think of like a baby, it would do it, these short feeds for like a number of months. But you've been doing this for years and years and years. So I'm so impressed by your stamina, honestly.
I had a break a couple of years ago for, no, last year for a month or two. And when I came back, it was like, oh my goodness, how do I do this again? As Brian said, we've had a newborn for the last 20 years.
Yes.
But then the joy and the fun that you get, the work seems the minor part of what you do, watching them grow and at the age where they're learning to hop around, or the mountain possum we have at the moment who is climbing around and discovering everything. They're the things you remember. You don't remember the dirty bottles, the sheets. And that'll be like you with your baby, yes.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, it's so rewarding, and that, you know, outweighs everything. So I can understand that completely. Amazing, amazing. Now, you were saying that your mum always had animals, and that, you know, was a big part of your interest and your own love for animals. And you actually got her into caring. So she does possum caring as well.
Yes. Yes, she did. As I was off work and I was given this little possum, and mum enjoyed it so much too. And then suddenly, I got inundated with a lot of little possums, and mum found that it was just easy to do. She'd been a pediatric nurse, so she loved children, but she had that kind of feed, toilet, look after kind of mentality. So, and she'd grown up with this thing of rescuing animals, you know. We were always, as a child, my grandmother was always off to the chook places to rescue the chickens that were going to be killed. Or, you know, she found out that somebody had dumped some cats, she'd go and pick them up. And so, yeah, that was always what she had and I had. But mum got her love of possums, and mum still does the possums. She'll do one or two at a time. At the moment, she's got a mountain possum that she absolutely adores, or what are we supposed to call them now, short-eared possums. And that, you know, mum finds that really rewarding. She's had to retire, but she still feels like she's doing something rewarding.
Absolutely, and has got that caring nature and can still, you know, be caring for something. Well, yeah, I mean, once again, I loved, you know, chopping up possum food and putting that out. And that was all where it started. And I think my chopping skills have improved since being 14.
But you had a natural gift for it. You had a very calm, quiet demeanor, and not everybody has that around the animals. I was really impressed when you first started handling the possums, how your own qualities made them relax. People come in and they're tense and upset, and the possums react badly. You could talk to them on some level, which was amazing. So yes, you were the person for the role.
Oh, that's very sweet of you. I learned from the best. Now, on to Wallaby. So your very first Wallaby was Emily. I still remember her. But you were obviously possums first, but now you've gone into blighters, brushtails, fastigales, redneck wallabies, eastern greys, wallaroos, paddy melons, you name it. I actually just wrote dot 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 because there was too many. Bettongs. Too many to list. Can we talk about some of the differences in those species and what you've noticed raising them? And is there a species that you have found particularly challenging?
The possums are the easiest to the brush-tailed possums are the easiest to raise and what we start people out on. In the possum world, it's ringtails. They are very hard to they have really complex digestive systems. They get bloat. They if they're not in a group, you can't just raise one, you have to raise a group. They can be really difficult, and I try not to give new carers. I like them to do maybe a year of doing some brush tails, like at least 10 brush tails before they even touch a ringtail, because I call them heartbreakers. They're very difficult to get through, and they will break a new carer, losing them constantly. That ringtails are very difficult in the possum world, and possums in general are much different to raising a macropod. Possums are clingy when they're little, and then they naturally move away from you and become mature and don't want to know you as they go out to release. Whereas the macropods come in kind of not wanting to know you that much, but as they grow, they become very clingy. And the trick was to work out how to encourage their, how to keep, give them the nurturing. But encourage independence in them as well to be feel to not want to keep me in sight. In the macropod world, the easiest ones are the redneck wallabies and probably swamp wallabies. The eastern greys are the hardest I find. I actually, every time I do an eastern grey, I say, never again, never touching an eastern grey again. They just, you look at them the wrong way, they get sick.
They break.
You never know that you've been successful until you see them leave out of that release pen, because they just are difficult. If they're going to, they'll get a disease, and they're so beautiful that they break your heart. But they get diseases, they get fractures. Fractures don't heal properly if they've come in with fractures. They get stressed easily. Very rewarding to do one, very loving animals, but really difficult. And I keep, and as I said, I every time I do one, I say, never again, not doing another one. Gliders I've found particularly challenging being a vegan, because they need to eat moths and worms, live moths and worms. And when you try and so I've got a system now where I do the hard bit where they're on milk, and then I hand them to another carer that's happy to do the carnivore section, because I just couldn't kill a moth, put a moth in and go. Fastigales again are carnivores, and they're difficult in that they're not very affectionate animals. They don't really bond with you, so. While it's very rewarding to put fastigales back into the wild because there's so few of them, they're not grateful.
Yeah.
They're not that you want them to be grateful, but you know what I mean.
No,
They just,
absolutely. You want something a little bit back for all the hard work you're doing.
yeah. And their diet is very fussy and very hard to do. So yeah, that's the main differences between the two. And the challenge has been the Eastern Greys. I've been doing Bettongs lately, which is also another challenge because very different diet to other macropods, needing that little bit of protein in their diet. And they can be really difficult to, get it wrong slightly and you've got a constipated betong that's really sick, or you've got a betong with diarrhea. But again, a really good skill set, an expansion of skill sets, if you know what I mean, that they learning new things and trying new things, it keeps it interesting, which is the bit I also enjoy, the continual learning and increasing our knowledge of native animals and how to care for them. 20 years ago, we didn't know really how to treat diarrhea properly in native animals, and most macropods that come in will get diarrhea at some time, especially when they teeth, the pinkies, when their teeth come through, are just like a baby. You'll get diarrhea, you'll get they'll be off their bottle. And 20 years ago, we didn't really know what to do, and we lost so many, but now we've got this, all these tools that we can use. We know antifungals, antidiarrheals, antibiotics. So yeah, that's also something that's made it easier than 20 years ago doing them, having more things available and an expansion of our veterinary knowledge of them.
Oh, absolutely.
So, yeah.
Yeah. And seeing all those different species and being able to, you know, try those things with different species, like, oh, I wonder if this, you know, would work here. And incredible.
Yeah. Yes. And crossing it over. I mean, the other thing I always encourage is, you know, is to listen to, even to new carers. They might have an idea you haven't thought of, and never have your mind closed to doing it straight down the line. You will never get one macropod or possum the same as another one. So the challenging gliders are the feather tails. They're, you know, they're the size of a 20-cent piece. And as an adult and as a baby, they're, you know, size of a 5-cent piece, and trying to put a few drops in, trying to keep them in something, you know. I found like a microwave steamer container works really well. Otherwise they just disappear into cracks and you're forever trying to find them. So feather tail gliders are really difficult.
Challenging themselves, keeping them in your care.
Yes.
Well, there's a lot there. I didn't even realize that ringtails were more difficult. So I learned a lot even just in that conversation. Now, obviously, with these orphans that are coming into care, what is the most common cause that brings them into your care?
In the area that I'm in, the most common cause is for possums, it's cars in breeding season. Particularly the males are focused, and they just run out in front of those cars. And then when the mothers have babies on their back later in the season, they're slower and they don't realize, you know. Dog attack is becoming more and more frequent. We've had a lot of dog attacks in the last 2 years. People forget that their beautiful dogs have a prey drive. Mm-hmm. And it's not the dog's fault. The owners need to protect the dog from its own drive. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is power lines. It's not out where I live, the power lines aren't as insulated, so we get them being zapped on the power lines. The other thing is sometimes they fall through chimneys or in really hot weather. Lots of burns from walking on tin roofs, particularly here in Queensland. With macropods, the biggest thing is cars again, and it's normally the females in breeding season. The males are chasing the female. The female makes it across the road. The male gets hit. And then later in the season, she's weighed down with this big lump in her pouch, and she just doesn't realize that she's not going as fast, and they'll get hit. And then also dog attack again is a common one. And sometimes barbed wire too with the macropods, although people are realizing and taking barbed wire down. The gliders, Mostly is from cats, people letting their cats wander. And then the other reason they come into care, like if we get a weather event, particularly here at Brookfield, they'll get separated from mum as the fast flowing water in creeks because we get a lot of water rising. And possums, obviously, if there's a storm, will fall from trees. And then in the dry, we get a lot of joeys in possum and macropod. From mum can't feed herself, and so she will dump the baby to keep for her own survival. But yeah, they're the main reasons they come into care. Mostly from humans,
Yeah.
unfortunately, but we try our best to offset that.
I know it's difficult when, you look at the bigger picture and it's like, oh, human. There's a lot
Human,
there.
yeah.
But I guess there's some,
Yes.
good takeaways.
But then also people step up and I'm always amazed at people in a neighborhood who rescue these and go out and find the injured ones and bring them to me and will go out and come out in the middle of the night and send me photos. And I don't know how everybody got my mobile number, but I think everybody in Brookfield has my mobile number. And at some point they sent me a photo of a possum or a macropod they're worried about.
Yeah, so all the good is counteracted by the impact that we've had. And I guess a good takeaway from that for me is to a reminder that we do need to keep our dogs inside. That's important for sure.
And cats, yes.
And cats. Now, what are some of the government initiatives that carers can tap into when it comes to finances and the costs involved with raising orphan wildlife?
Okay, so there's the Brisbane City Council has a carers grant once a year where if you put your receipts in for the money you've spent on formula. Or if you wanted to buy something like a humidity crib, which is really good for when you're raising pinkies, or any expensive equipment. And then I think the state government has one now. The Brisbane City Council one is, I think, $1,000. And the state government now has a $5,000 grant once a year where you can put in quotes for things like cages and things like that that help out. The group I'm with, Wildcare, we have had bequests and some grants from various areas, and so they provide us with some formulas. A lot of what you do as a wildlife carer is from your own pocket, but there are a few things around to help you buy the very big things, like a humidity crib, which is $1,100. I take a lot of sick animals from the zoo, so I have, and from Lone Pine, and I have syringe pumps so that I can give them IV fluids and antibiotics constantly. Just to get them through the first couple of days. So I got those through a Brisbane City Council grant. So yeah, I think they're the main ones. I think some of the regional councils offer grants like Gold Coast as well, but in the Brisbane area. But a lot of it is, we say to new carers, don't expect funding. It's good if you can get it. And certain groups help out. I know the Rescue Collective now also helps. They were set up during the droughts 5 years ago, and the Rescue Collective does help carers out across all the groups with food and teats and milk powder and stuff, and have helped me in times where I've had lots of animals. So
Yeah.
yeah, they're the main ones.
And I guess on that, if someone does want to become a carer as well, it's not like, you're going to be thrown an animal without being set up as well. So you'd be going to these courses, you can
No.
buy your pet pack, you can buy your milk powder and that kind of thing. So
Yeah.
it can be something that you
Yes.
could do in increments and stages yourself. So it's not such a big.
Yeah. Collect as you go, as you learn. Yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah.
absolutely. Now, there's a lot of experience amongst animal carers, and obviously that's led to lots of different opinions and different ways that things should be
Yes.
done. I'm just thinking of my experience with a billion nurses telling me different ways to do a baby, or oh, not do a baby, to take care of a baby. But anyway, how do you make sure
Yes.
that you are getting the right advice?
I suppose the most important thing is to find someone that you have confidence in. Find someone that's looking after animals, and when you see them care for them, you see a good outcome and you like the way that person does that. And then try and work with that mentor. I also believe that you should keep yourself open to every idea people come along with, but use common sense in that as well. Some things you hear are just ridiculous, and you have to have some common sense. And to go to training, there's most group, all groups offer training, and then there's always vets and experts running courses that anybody can attend. The group I'm with run a course nearly every weekend, and that allows us to upgrade our skills, and that each year. And there'll be different kinds of things on each species that you can attend. And also, I think you have to remember that you're never going to get the same problem twice with an animal. I used to say to people, write down what you're told by a vet or a mentor in a book, and then go back to it if you something, because you will forget. But to keep up to date, training is really important. And particularly with wild care, we make sure that we're teaching the new, not new for new state, but new techniques that are going to make it easier, that we've learnt the hard way what doesn't work, and then we can teach people what does work, but also listen to new carers if they're finding it doesn't work, and try and problem solve. And that's the role of the mentor. So a good mentor can help you through the minefield of a million opinions. And I think at the end of the day too, you're looking, the carer is looking after that animal, and you know that animal, and you're that animal's advocate. So you have to be aware of what's going on with it and speak up and ask for help when you're looking after it. So.
Absolutely. Well, obviously, I'm still doing bats, and I have done for a number of years. And a small part of me was like, oh, I got to do the course again, like every single year. But every time I kick myself, I'm like, no, that's actually so important. And yes, we're going through all this, and it's, a big day of learning. But it's so important because little changes do happen, and we learn new things. And as you said, that, compilation of knowledge and minor adjustments every year, there'd be new things, and that's why you do it, and that's why you refresh your knowledge. It's like a first aid course or CPR course. These things are going to change, and we're always improving, so it's important.
Yes, exactly.
Now, we did have a question from our listeners, and unsurprisingly, it was someone wanting to become a carer. So, for our listeners who are also interested in becoming a carer, what are the steps involved?
So the first step in Queensland is to join a wildlife group. So there are quite a few groups, some very good groups around up and down the coast and in Brisbane. Once you join the group, you'll then go to a series of courses that orientation, basic care. All carers will start with possums or birds, so it's one or the other normally, and or bats if you're doing bats. and you will do the courses and you will be shown what you needed to collect, and you need to put your equipment together, do the courses, get your formulas, read what you need to read, find yourself a good mentor within the group that respects you and that you respect and listens to you and is there to help you. And that's what you need to do. Just find a group first off, and they will support you through the process. They will help you get the equipment, get the skills. And people get upset because they go along to their first course and they think they'll get a baby. But it could take 6 to 12 months before you're given an animal to care for, mm-hmm. because we want to know that you're ready mm-hmm. to deal with something like that.
Absolutely. You need to make sure that you have that knowledge. And it makes sense too, are willing to do the time to be actually receiving a little life that you have to take care of.
Yes.
Makes a lot of sense.
That's right.
Well, Lexi, thank you so much. I have loved chatting to you. And once again, you've been a big part of my life, and I'm very grateful that I've met you, and you've been a big inspiration to me. And as we said before we started recording, I'll have to come see you soon. I'll give you my baby.
Yes.
You pass me your furry babies.
Yes.
We'll have a lovely time.
Okay. Oh, thank you. It's been a pleasure watching you evolve your skills and become the professional that you are. So yes.
Thank you. That's very sweet of you. Well, guys, hope you enjoyed that episode. I definitely did. Lexi is an amazing lady, and she has given me so much inspiration. I hope maybe a few of you are inspired to do some caring as well. It makes a world of difference to our little critters that are in danger out there in the wild and have come into care because of humans. So if there's anything you can do, or perhaps do a bit of wildlife caring on the side, have a think about it if you can. Anyway, guys, I hope you have had a great week. We'll be back in your ears next week. Bye.